We will call the Property Tax Relief and Local Sales Tax Division to order, and we're going to hear House File 2059 first, and then we will get back to the regular order of the agenda. And we have Representative Dill here. We do not quite have a quorum, so we will move your bill at another time. But at this time, Representative Dill, if you would present your bill for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have an amendment which you won't be able to adopt, so I will have the page pass it out. The amendment, Mr. Chair, you want me to explain the amendment, or you want me to explain the bill, or how would you like me to go ahead?
Go ahead and explain the bill with the amendment.
Okay. A couple of things that were given to us in a previous committee was, number one, this bill did not have a time for which it will have a date certain that it would have the election by. So that amendment does that. And secondly is at the end where it talks about when the tax shall expire, it had a number that we think is too large in terms of capitalizing in the cost of the projects plus interest. So we're going to have that at the tax committee. The full tax committee will have that final number drawn into the bill. Okay, then there's also one, since we're not adopting the amendment at the present.
Well, Representative Dill, we do have a quorum now. So would someone move that amendment?
Uh-huh.
All right, Representative Dietrich moves the A070449X amendment. Any debate on that? If not, I'm going to call for the vote on the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
I have a small oral amendment to the amendment.
Representative Dell, provide that oral amendment.
All right, very good. It says on line 1.2, it says, if approved by the voters at a special election, it should say at an election. Remove the word special.
Okay, we'll delete the word special. We're going to vote on the oral amendment to the amendment. All those in favor?
I'd just like to incorporate that in my amendment.
We're going to move the bill first. We'll do that first. Representative Dietrich moves House File 2059 for possible inclusion into the property tax omnibus bill. And now we have an amendment. We have an oral amendment to that. So we're going to take a vote on deleting the word special. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. That amendment is adopted. Now we go back to the original amendment. I'm going to take the vote on that. All those in favor of the 0449X amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Please proceed.
All right. Mr. Chair, on line 1.4 of the amendment, you understand that we intend to fill in that the dot, dot, dot at a later time.
Okay. Yes.
Very good. All right. Today I have the mayor of Ely with me today. Their provision would provide for a 1% sales tax after a vote of the people in the community of Ely. And they have a project list which is going around. They'll talk about the regional significance of the bill, the projects, the cost, et cetera, some of the questions that have been posed by the committee. So with that, the mayor of Ely.
Good morning. I want to thank the chair.
Please say your name, please.
My name is Charles Novak. I'm the mayor of the city of Ely. And I'm accompanied by two council members behind me, Heidi Omers and John Linders. This is very important for our city as we turn the corner to make our city well again. We have a list of projects, 10 to be numbered here, for a total of $20,071,000. That's what the estimate from the engineering firm that we got. We are looking at helping our hospital out. They're going to be changing their entrance and emergency entrance to the other side of the building. We need to put the street and the infrastructure in there. But that also helps us bring our infrastructure up to the West End, which is going to be developed in the near future after we settle an annexation agreement with Town Morse. At the west end of town, we have Mesabi Trail, which is very heavily traveled coming into our city. We're going to put a trailhead down there. We're going to put a rest stop so that they can take a little break, have some cleanup facilities, toilet facilities, etc. And that'll be our gateway entrance to the Boundary Waters. And we are a gateway to the Boundary Waters. We plan to support the school district and the hospital, the school's swimming pool guide. The community passed the referendum to support the school, but that doesn't include funding to replace this pool. the hospital could use therapeutic pool, and the residents want to have a facility that they could utilize, and also our visitors could come in. We have 700,000 visitors come to our town each year. We probably have a greater tax producing capacity than the towns around us. And our project should include sharing this with Babbitt and Winton all the way out to Tower and get our trails and our recreation in place so that you, your children, grandchildren, and all your constituents that come up to Ely every year to recreate and enjoy our little town will still have a town to come to and be able to enjoy it even more. Answering any questions anyone would have on this, if you would.
Thank you very much, Mayor Novak. Any questions from the committee? Yes, Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Mayor, I just wanted to ask about the pool a little bit more. How, and I know this goes beyond perhaps the scope of this committee, but how does, what kind of hours would the community hospital have in use of that pool? What kind of breakdown of time allotment would you have between the school district, the hospital, and then also the tourists using the facility?
Mayor, I'm back.
Thank you. The time allotment would be decided between the school and the hospital so that the hospital could schedule its therapy sessions properly. Normally early morning. The school's competitive swimming had always been afternoon practice sessions and swim meets in the evenings, and all the other times would be generally open to the public. And if the voters asked for a greater capacity for that, I'm sure they'd be happy to have us funded out of some other resources to expand the facility.
Representative Anderson.
And then, Mr. Chair, I thought I heard in your testimony that this was part of a school of on referendum and the citizens voted down the pool portion of it?
No, the...
Mayor Novak?
The referendum passed, but the school was still working when the referendum passed. And the school just found a $300,000 shortfall, which puts them close to statutory debt limits. They don't have the money to replace that pool at this time.
Okay, so they're taking the money that was approved for the pool and using it elsewhere.
They have been approved for the pool.
Mr. Novak, through the chair, please.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Sorry.
Yeah. Mayor Novak.
I should know how to do this as a mayor. they did not include funding for the pool replacement in the referendum.
Thank you. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for council. We look at one of these local options and sales tax. Are they usually a laundry list of things, or are they usually for a specific project?
Ms. Dalton?
What's the history?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, generally there is a main project, and there may be a couple of other minor projects associated with it. There is a handout in your packet that lists all the bills that have been introduced this year, summarizing what's funded out of each of them.
Okay.
Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, I don't understand the termination of the taxes. Either $20 million, at which the bond proceeds are limited to the bond issuance, or $50 million. That seems like a spread there, unless we're talking about the debt service as well. Can anybody tell me about that? Ms. Fountain, maybe?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that question. Representative Earhart, that does represent, if you look at the amendment that we adopted, the 0449X amendment, we have removed the $50 million and put a blank amount because we're working with finance right now to get the number that would be the $20 million in principal plus the interest over a period of 30 years, which would be the normal amortization on bonds of this nature. So the amendment removed the $50 million that you are questioning about and left a blank amount, which could be bigger or could be smaller. I anticipate that it will be a smaller number.
Thank you.
And also, and I guess this to the mayor, is I'm really wondering what would be the wording on your referendum on the ballot, because are you going to have listed all of these projects specifically, or are they going to vote individually on each of these projects?
I'm not sure what the exact wording would be. This information will be dealt with the public through public hearings, through the press, and through communications that we do, talking to our local people as we visit or walk our town. What the exact wording would be, I'm not exactly sure at this point. We have assistance from council and probably representatives to look at past history, what wording was.
Okay. Is there anyone from the audience that would care to speak for or against House File 2059? It not closing comments there, Representative Dill?
Well, Mr. Chair, that Ely is always in a position where they are trying to cope with the influx of visitors who come for a very short period of time, visit their city, and then go out into the massive federal wilderness and return for a very short period of time, use their facilities, use their infrastructure, and then leave and come back to other areas of the state or the country. So they are very challenged with trying to provide the type of infrastructure. The mayor didn't testify about this, but their wastewater treatment facility is for a town of what, Mayor?
Slightly larger than the city of Mankato.
And your population, Mayor, is?
3,700.
So, I mean, if you think about a town of the city of Mankato versus a town of 3,700 in a wastewater treatment plant, you can see that there are challenges ahead. Also, the hospital members, is a hospital that is not the city of Ely Bloomington Hospital. I mean, that's the name of it. It serves a wide, huge area, even another county. Lake County is in neighboring to Ely. You got to remember that you have this huge reservoir of people out there getting hurt, drowning, getting sick, breaking legs, doing everything you can imagine out in the boundary waters, and they come into Ely and they need services. Much like a member just recently broke his leg up at Lutzen and had to go to the Grand Marais Hospital. Closest hospital from there was about 90 miles away. Ely is 50 miles to the closest hospital from Ely. Then you have to get out of the boundary waters. So you can see the challenges that they have to deal with. And that's the reason I brought forward their proposal. One of the things also I want to respond, Mr. Chair, one of the questions that was posed to us by the committee was not the question on how the wording would be on the ballot. Otherwise, we would have had the wording, some type of wording, a suggested wording prepared for this committee.
Thank you. The chair will lay over House File 2059 for possible inclusion. Thank you much.
Thank you.
Representative Brown, would you take the chair, please?
The next bill for consideration is House File 2142. Representative Marquardt, would you like to move the bill to get it before the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It actually is with high honor that I would like to move House File 2142 for possible inclusion into the division report. And members, House File 2142 is the citizens' property tax relief omnibus bill. And this bill came out of the responses we received, over 650 responses from residents around this state that are here. And as these ideas came in, we looked at them one by one, and we kind of tagged them as they had ideas and so forth. And so what you have here represents the best of kind of what we rated as ideas that we thought would really be beneficial to helping our property taxpayers and also lowering property taxes. And I also at this time want to extend a huge thank you to the 650 plus residents and the three of the citizens who are here today for providing input that we have. And when we launched this, we talked about that this was going to be a way in which we would bring ideas from the kitchen table to the committee table. Thomas right here, I asked him today, he was sitting at the kitchen table when he phoned in his idea. So and Kathleen was from a computer from her living room. So it wasn't from just the kitchen table. It was from the kitchen table and the living room to the committee table right here today. So I think this is a great example of grassroots legislation. And again, I'm honored to be producing this bill and so thankful for all those who contributed and those who are here today. How did we get to this point of the final six? As I mentioned, as we went through all the ideas, we kind of tagged those that we thought would be workable. And then we came up with 24, 25 ideas and put them on a ballot, so to speak, sent them out to division members, as you know. And then as we got those responses back, we took There was about, I suppose, eight or nine that probably had a majority of the votes that came back, and we picked six ideas from those. And I always felt and truly believe that the strength of any property tax relief effort that we put together was going to rely on the amount of inputs and comments that we had from citizens. And so this is the result of that. What I'd like to do is... Oh, I have an amendment.
Would you like to move your amendment?
I would like to move that amendment, the technical amendment.
And does everybody have it in front of them? Any discussion on it? Representative Paymore?
No, I
would. Okay. Any discussion on the amendment? All in favor of the author's amendment to get this in the shape you'd like, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Marquardt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, I'd like to just quickly just review it. Then we're going to go back section by section. And at that point, after I briefly describe what each section does, then I'll call on the testifier at that time to provide some comments on that. So the bill does six primary things. Increases the market value that qualifies for reduced class rate for disabled persons from $32,000 to $50,000. It reinstates this old house provision with a few changes from what we had prior to its being quit. We establish a classification for rural lands, which we have had before here when the Department of Revenue talked about their assessment reports. We allow homeowners, a fourth portion of this bill is to allow homeowners to pay the property taxes on a monthly basis. A fifth area would allow a property owner to go back 3 years on their property tax refund forms, with the idea was that since that program is not the best advertised, as we've talked about in this committee, that this would provide property owners with some relief and protections if, in fact, they weren't notified of this. And then finally, it provides a property tax deferral for seasonal rec properties, and we'll go over those a little bit more in detail. So the first area of the bill, we're going to take this area first, is the disabled homestead class. And what that does, and that's actually section four of the bill, it increases the market value eligible for 1B classification, and that is for homestead property of persons who are blind, disabled, paraplegic veterans, and any person that is permanently and totally disabled. Right now, the first 32,000 valuation is at 0.45 instead of 1.00. We upped that from 32,000 to 50,000. And so at this time, I'd like to turn to the first testifier, Kathleen Stolte, and she's from Minneapolis.
Hi.
Say your name for the record, please.
I'm Kathleen Stolte. I live at 1706 Thomas Avenue North, Minneapolis. And I bought this house because it was the best I could afford. I'm single, I live alone, and I've been disabled since 1980. I applied for homestead taxes in September. The estimated market value, limited market value, and taxable market value are all equal in amount. Unlike many of the other homesteaded and non-homestead properties in my community, I was told by the assessor's office that the homestead taxes for 2007 on my house will be $300 less than non-homestead taxes, $2,200. I applied for the special homestead classification via Minnesota Revenue Form P-12, a tax credit for disabled homeowners. This is a reduction in property taxes, and I received it. This credit is based on taxing the first $32,000 at a rate of 0.45% of its market value. In the last 5 years, houses appreciated greatly in value since this law was passed. For me, I will receive just over a little over $100 credit for being a disabled homeowner. My specific recommendation is to increase the first $32,000 market value of Class 1B property at a net class rate of 0.45 to include the first $50,000 of market value. The reason for my recommendation is that the value of homes and taxes have increased significantly since this law was passed. The increase to $50,000 in the calculation would offset the steep rise in home values and subsequent taxation and increased costs in hiring upkeep work to maintain our homes. We, disabled homeowners in Minnesota, simply cannot increase our fixed incomes by just going out and getting better paying jobs to keep up with our tax burden. We need this law amended to level the playing field so we can continue living independently. Thank you.
Representative Marquardt.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. If you wouldn't mind if we could go through the entire bill and then if members have questions, then we can. Thank you. The second part of the bill reestablishes Section 3, we're going back a little bit, reestablishes this old house program that actually was in effect from 1993 to 2003 and then discontinued. What this bill provision in the bill would do, it would exempt up to $75,000 of improvements on a home with certain qualifications. The home would have to be at least 50 years old. And it would be exempt for 10 years with a phase out in the last couple years. And we're going to let, Thomas Hansen here, he has actually a few other ideas on all of this, but the idea was generated from his idea. He wants to offer an amendment a little bit, but we'll have to wait on that.
Mr. Hansen.
Hello, thank you. My name is Thomas Alfred Hansen.
Yeah.
I'm here to tell you all why I'm here. I called out Hotline. My spouse and I moved into our home in May of 1977 and are still there today. Of the 23 homes around us, one is now a group home, two are rented, and one is empty. Of all those homes, only four out of the 23 have been there since the beginning of the development. Eight homes have had four owners, and five homes have had five owners, and the rest have had two or three owners. Each time these homes have been sold over the years, or property values have risen or gone up, I call it take the money and run down the neighborhood, leaving the homes that need maintenance, roofs, windows, sidings, driveways, and improvements. But what they did do is raise my property taxes, because I plan on staying there for the rest of my life. So far, I've lived in Brooklyn Park all my life. What I'm getting to is in 2004, we added 400 square feet additional improvement and are in over $100,000 to our property. By doing this, we raised our property taxes this year by over $522. Our home is now about 1,265 square feet, up to what most are in the neighborhood. We had a very small two-bedroom tuck-under garage, which is still two-bedroom. We added a bigger kitchen, a little bit bigger family room, so when our children come back home from out of town, we all have a place to gather instead of our 4x4 kitchen and a garage, roof, siding, and windows. With higher property taxes and the 30-year-old city streets, curbs, storm sewers, water lines, and street lights, which are now some taxed separately on our utility bills, which we didn't get taxed for in 1997. We still get the city streets swept, plowed, potholes patched, the same as we did in 1997. From the city, from the state, the county, and city, I still see police and fire at the same rate that I did in 1977. But our property taxes have gone up for keeping up our neighborhood. Instead of taking the money and run, I would rather see people get some sort of relief by if they do a big improvement to their property, the taxes would stay down, considering they've been paying these constant inflated taxes because all the people in the neighborhood have taken the money. Of the 23 homes, three other houses, counting ours, have had improvements. Two of those are original neighborhoods, that's including myself, and one is one of the people who is a second homeowner that's been there since then. What I would like to see changed in the bill, this is my amendment, is move it down to 25 years and instead of 50. Just to try to keep the people in the communities instead of always just taking the money and leaving a bunch of rundown houses. And that would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hanson. The next area of the bill, Section 5, establishes a new rural vacant land classification. And this would be unplatted real estate, rural in nature, consisting of at least 10 acres. We've talked about this before in committee. And assessors, it would be easier. It would also include timber, lumber, wood products, that type of thing. If you had a hunting shack on this property, it wouldn't exclude it from still being classified in this new rural vacant land. And that would be classified the same as agricultural non-homestead would be the classification. And I do have a statement from, could not make it, John Underrecht of Kuchiching County, Minnesota, of course, and I'd like to read this, but thank you for the opportunity to give a statement to the committee. Tax classification should be separate for recreation and farming land. We farmers have our land rapidly increasing in value because people from outside of our area are buying neighboring plots and using them for unrelated purposes like hunting. Our land should be rising at a level of farmland. It is rising to the rate of hunting land. People should not be allowed to exploit the system for personal gain in regards to property taxes. If a property is classified as farming, the land should be tilled and show evidence of farming. So that's the third area of the bill. The fourth area of the bill would allow property owners to pay their property taxes on a monthly basis. Now, since you don't get your property tax statement on what you pay until March, you're not going to be able to start this until May. So actually it would be 8 monthly payments beginning on May 15th. And we have, I need to read this letter also. It is from Nancy Klingman, who was going to be here today, but could not be here today. And as I read the letter, you will find out why. My apologies for not appearing in person today, but I have had a very unusual past couple of weeks with the death of both of my parents, and also today marks my 50th birthday. She had missed time from work and just didn't feel she could miss any more, but she had planned to be here. This kind of policy would help not only the taxpayer, but counties as well, as they would possibly have fewer notices to send out, less costs associated with publishing delinquent lists, possibly even have less forfeitures, and more than likely a stable cash flow. I had encountered the problem once when my mortgage was paid off. So this past year, I decided to try something as the time would come up, and somehow I forgot to budget for it. Once I received my truth in taxation statement, I took the estimated tax and divided it by 12 and started prepaying the county that amount in January and will make any adjustments once I receive the official tax statement. I knew I could do this as the county accepts prepayments for splits, so it wouldn't be something that was new to them or take anything on their part to set up. I use my online checking account through my bank and set up the payment monthly. It's very easy to do this way. No checks to write, postage to pay, so forth. This also would be useful for the already present ACH transfers that people can sign up for, but in my opinion, a monthly option should also be made available. I actually prefer the method over allowing the use of credit cards. Credit card only makes the debt worse for taxpayer at a much higher interest rate, only complicating a stressed budget for the taxpayer. That one's probably for another committee. With counties downsizing as they are, it may even allow for less employee time, which is desirable as employee numbers are going down and workload going up. I would think the rush at due tax time would be minimized by using this method. In closing, I would like to say that I was very honored to be asked to come and speak before you today, as my dad was former Maurer County Auditor from 1985 to 1989, Donald LaValle, and worked in the Maurer County Auditor's Office and was Chief Deputy for most of those 34 years. He would have been very proud of the fact that I had an idea for property tax legislation and that they could possibly use this idea. Thank you for your time and your interest in my idea for Minnesota property tax, House File 2142. I think a letter like this just underscores the reason where we need to have outreach to go out and bring residents in. And also why there's a lot more out there that we don't hear from that can't make it in for one reason or another. And that's why I think it's so important to include residents in as many different avenues as we can into the process. What this does, as you read through it, it sets up and kind of instructs counties to set up a method on how this would work. It doesn't really prescribe how that would work, but it does set up a way for counties to look at that. The fifth area in the bill allows you to go back 3 years on your property tax refunds. And with that, we have a testifier, Roger Urban, from the city of Eagan. Mr. Urban.
Mr. Urban.
I'd like to really thank the committee for letting me talk to you, and especially Representative Markert. It's very refreshing to hear the legislature getting input from citizens and not just lobbyists and representatives of organizations. So, thank you. I'm a citizen who's been paying taxes here in Minnesota for 40 years. And I'm one of the unfortunate people who missed out on my property tax refund because I didn't know that I was eligible. And after I found out the right information and stopped kicking myself for not filing in the past, it occurred to me, am I really that stupid, or are there some other people in the same boat? So Paul Cummings was kind enough to ask House Research to get an answer to that question. How many people miss out on their property tax refunds every year because they don't file? And the estimate the research came up with is 350,000 people every year. So, in a way, I am representing somebody. I'm representing those 350,000 people who missed out on their tax refund. But why didn't they file? Well, it's pretty obvious. There's two reasons. Either they never heard of the property tax refund, or they heard about it, but they had the wrong idea about how it works. So there's a problem of communication here. The word is not getting out to the taxpayers about this property tax refund. Well, I guess you've talked about this before, so forgive me if it's repetitious, but how does the state of Minnesota communicate to the taxpayers? Well, this is Minnesota Individual Income Tax Forms and Instructions. They send that out to every taxpayer once a year, and that's the only communication that you're going to get that's initiated by the state of Minnesota. If you want more information, you've got to know what information it is you want and ask for it. So what's in this book about the property tax refund? Nothing. Not one word in here about the property tax refund. Well, some people do get the refund instructions, so the orange book, stapled inside the green book. And who are they? Well, they're the people who filed last year for the property tax refund. So you can get information on the property tax refund if you already know about the property tax refund. That's classic catch-22 right there. Okay, well, we're not going to get it from the state. How about the counties? They sent out the tax statements. They must tell you about it. Well, here's what they send out. This nice, colorful one-page statement. I think it's purple this year. And then, of course, it has your tax bill on the bottom. On the top, it does have a coupon. And it says, send in a skin with your state tax refund application. And on the back is an explanation. And here's what it says. If you owned and occupied this property on January 22nd as your homestead, you may qualify for a property tax refund. In addition, Minnesota homeowners whose property taxes increased by more than 12% over the last year may be eligible for a special property tax refund. Okay, well, you folks know all about the property tax refund, so this makes perfect sense to you. it's, you know that there's two property tax refunds, not one. One is a special refund. It's based on how much your property tax increased. The other is, doesn't have a name, it's based on what your income is. And the property tax refund is in addition to this other unnamed refund. So if you know what it is already, you read it like a lawyer or a tax account, it makes perfect sense. It doesn't tell the whole story, but there's nothing wrong with it. But suppose you come into this as a taxpayer who really doesn't know about the tax refund. You could look at this and if you read it carefully, you could say, in addition, oh, that means another requirement in addition to this other requirement. So you could interpret it to say you have to own this property as your homestead and you have to have a 12% tax increase over last year. Well, that's the wrong interpretation, but very easy to come by. Or I suppose you don't read it very carefully. What you're going to get is something like this. If you own this property as a homestead, blah, 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 12% increase over last year, blah, blah, blah. So pretty easy to come to the conclusion that, gee, if I want to get this refund, I got to have a 12% tax increase. Well, that's what happened to me. So there is a communications problem, I would say, since there's 350,000 people involved. There's a massive communications problem here. So how to fix it? Well, the best way would be to eliminate the separate filing altogether. Put the tax refund on the income tax form as a line item. I don't know if that's feasible. It has been done in the past. In 1998, they had what they called the one-time property tax rebate, and it was on the income tax form. It would really be interesting to look into how that worked out. I'm willing to bet that not many people missed that one. Okay, other suggestions? Tell the Department of Revenue to put a page on the property tax refund in this book. It is based on income, after all. And have them put a bullet on the cover. If your income is under $91,000, you may get a tax property tax refund, even if your property taxes didn't increase. Or if they want to staple the return inside of here, send it to everybody who's got, could be eligible, everybody who's got an income under $91,000. Put it in there. How about the counties? It would be nice if they would send a simple little one-page statement out here explaining in plain English and completely how the property tax rebate works. The state could print them up, send them to the counties. All the counties would have to do is stuff them in the envelopes. Wouldn't be too hard. Okay, now we come to the third thing, which is what's in this bill. When the people finally find out that they have missed these rebates for years, they're going to say, gee, can I file for years past and get what I didn't get before? Well, the current law says, yeah, 1 year. And, of course, this bill is to improve it, make it back 3 years. 5 years would be better, 7 years would be better, but okay, 3 years is good. That's a start. So here's where my story comes in. I retired and my income went way down. I was eligible for property tax rebate of about $1,000 starting in year 2001. But I didn't know it. I had got the idea you had to have that 12% tax increase. Maybe I got it from this statement. I think I may have seen it somewhere else too. 2002, same story. 2003, same story. 2004, my wife's reading a newsletter from the county. It's all about recycling, county parks, zoning. And in the middle of it, buried is a little paragraph that says, property tax refund. There is a property, two parts of the property tax refund. One is based on income, and if your income is under $85,000, that was the number at that time, you could get that. So she says, hey, look at this. Wow, First time I ever heard that there was an income-based property tax refund. So, sent the revenue for the forms, filed, got the refund eventually, looked in the form, says, it's before August 15th, you can file for last year. So, luckily it was before August 15th, and so I was able to file for last year. How about those other 2 years? Didn't look too promising. Just to be sure, I called up Revenue, and they said, yeah, no, you're out of luck. Well, they're gone. You'll never see those refunds. So that's the story. A little sidelight, the next year, 2005, sure enough, there was a refund form stapled inside my green book. So I would say this amendment is a good thing, good start. It's going to help a lot of people. Especially if you address this communications problem and you get a lot of people now who, for the first time, are hearing that they're eligible for this refund, they're going to be very happy that they can go back 3 years and collect the refunds that they missed out on.
Thank you, Mr. Urban.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I think you have detailed that very well, and hopefully many of us were taking notes. Paul, were you taking notes? Hopefully, because these are, we've talked about what you've mentioned, Mr. Urban, in this committee, but you really lay it out very nicely for us. So, thank you. On the last letter I read, did I mention Nancy Klingman was the person? Did I mention her name? Okay, she was from Austin, Minnesota. I wanted to make sure I mentioned that. The last area of the bill deals with a property tax deferral for seasonal rec. We don't have a testifier on that, but it is a concern that came in time and time again in hearing, especially a lot of senior citizens who had bought in a cabin 30, 40 years ago. They want to keep it in the family. They'd like to pass it on to their kids someday. But the increase, the huge increase in market value and subsequently taxes are forcing them off these cabins that they would like to keep. So what we've done here is created a voluntary program very similar to the senior property tax deferral program with some differences. First of all, you have a primary owner and you have secondary owners, because in many of these lake cabins there's many different owners. So you, all of these primary and secondary owners would have to agree to go into the property tax deferral program. You would also have to have the property in your ownership for 15 years prior to applying for this. So this isn't something someone can do right now. It is for those who have had this property for a while and they'd like to keep it. And the way it would work is that you would set a base property tax amount, which could be whatever year you set that in. It could be payable 2007. And the deferral would be 50% of the taxes over that. So it's not completely like the senior deferral program, but it would be 50% of those increased taxes would go into the deferral, and you would remain in that program until either the property was transferred or the owners died, or if not everyone, if there's also secondary owners, did not sign on to it. Annually, everyone would have to sign on to stay in the program. Also, if, let's say, you turn that into your homestead and you had this deferral program, it would be then you could roll it into a senior deferral program if you were a senior at that point. There is no income limit. As we were putting this together, we talked a lot about that, and that's certainly something, you know, we could do as a committee, but there is no income limits to qualify as there would be for other programs. Seems to be I'm missing one point, but Madam Chair, I would open it up for questions at this time.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Representative Hamer.
Representative Marquardt, did I understand that you said that this is the division reports then? Did you say that? Or is this just, or is this the input from the citizens only?
Madam Chair and Representative Hamar, this is the citizens' property tax relief omnibus bill, not the division report, but a bill that put together the ideas we received from the property comment line.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Marquardt, I'm looking at Section 3 of the bill that reinstates the This Old House program. And I was just reading the text, and maybe you can give me some clarification on the whole natural disaster portion of this. Does this mean, and I didn't get through reading it all, does that mean that, say a town has a tornado hit it, and if your house happens to be 50 years old, you would be able to qualify for this, but if your home was 25 years old, you wouldn't be able to qualify for this program?
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you wouldn't mind, I'd like to turn that over to Ms. Baker on that.
Ms. Baker.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I think in a case that you're talking about, first of all, we'd have to discuss at some length, there's a disaster credit out there. And I think that probably would kick in first, depending on how many homes were destroyed and whether or not that would be qualified, you know, whether or not you could qualify under that. This program was structured very, very similar to the This Old House that was in effect for 10 years. And so there are some restrictions that if, in fact, the whole house was totally flattened, you couldn't use This Old House, because it has to be at least, I believe, 50%, that the structure still has to be 50% there, or I can't remember the exact language, but so I don't think, you know, it wouldn't qualify, and it isn't for use under that. It really is for use just for improvements to your property.
Madam Chair.
Under a normal course of...
Representative Anderson.
Ms. Baker, so then, say let me take out tornado, because that usually is massive destruction that we're talking about here. But say we're looking at a high wind storm, and you have a home that's, you know, 50 years old, and the siding that was on it gets ripped off. You have a neighbor next door that has a home that's only 30 years old. Same thing happens to them. You're saying the 50-year-old house would receive this old house money, whereas the next door neighbor would not.
Mr. Chairman and or Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, yes, the age of the house is critical here. So there is a distinction between if you had the 50-year-old house compared to the 30-year-old house. We also have to keep in mind, though, that a lot of those kind of improvements are maintenance type of things. And so when the assessor revalues a house after those kind of storms, a lot of that kind of value may not increase the value of the house all that much, because if in fact you have a 30-year-old house that the siding has to be replaced, you know, the assessor is going to come and he's going to say, you know, I'm not going to increase the value because of that by more than, you know, maybe not at all, or if any, by a very, you know, modest amount. And so I think we have to keep separate kind of the maintenance kind of issues from the real improvements of adding a room on, totally redoing the kitchen, adding a double garage, you know, all sorts of, where you're really adding square footage and adding things like that. I think there's a very distinct difference between those.
Okay. Representative Anderson?
Madam Chair, on another issue, but in the same section, I was just curious.
Yeah.
If someone makes an improvement to their home, but then they sell it a year later, mm-hmm. does the tax credit still apply to them, to the new homeowners, or is it obliterated after that point?
Madam Chair,
Representative Marquardt,
Representative Anderson, the valuation exclusion terminates whenever the property is sold or is reclassified to a class that does not qualify.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Marquardt. And then,
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, just one more thing. Mr. Urban that was spoke to the property tax refund was music to my ears, and I'm sure to Representative Wadler, since it's an issue that we've worked on. And hope to, and I'm glad you have these suggestions here. yes, there definitely is a problem. We have 350,000 people that don't apply for this program. So we've looked at it extensively. As you probably know from looking at the tax forms, adding another line has been problematic just because there's so many lines on there already, but there's a lot of different things that we could do to improve people's participation in this program. We hope to achieve that. So thank you for coming forward.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the subject of paying your your property taxes in monthly installments, there are some people who escrow their money so they can pay them in 12 installments. But what does this do to the cash flow for local units of government? How does that all work? Is that then, they don't have any problem with that, Representative Marquardt, or what?
Representative Marquardt.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Earhart. I haven't talked to the local units of government, but I actually would think it would improve their flow of money because usually the counties and the cities, they receive LGA and twice a year only, and then also their property taxes twice a year also. So, and usually what happens in their general funds is they'll go up and then it'll dip down, and they'll actually sometimes go in the reserves to cover for a bit on the cash flow. So I would think it would actually aid in keeping a more stable revenue source during the year for local units of government.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Marquardt, I was actually thinking about the counties getting the money in one chunk and then distributing it, I guess is the way it works under normal property tax. We have somebody standing up here that wanted to speak to that, I think.
Yes, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. Representative Earhart, to your point, I think there would be potentially some cash flow problems. I was contacted by a number of our communities that are concerned, especially when it comes to debt service payments, which are generally made, let me step back, property tax supported debt service payments are generally made in February and August of each year, and those are really scheduled to coincide with the settlements with the county. And so we are somewhat concerned that there would be a cash flow issue. These payments would be scheduled over the last half of the year, or the last two-thirds of the calendar year. Especially the August debt service payments could be at jeopardy because we would not have received but three of the eight payments by that point. So we do have some concerns on debt service. We have some other concerns, I think, generally with cash flow for all cities because this would schedule out those payments over a longer set of time. One thought that I had as I was sitting here listening to the discussion is that the state currently pays the market value homestead credit to cities, counties, and school districts in October and in December of each year. That October payment is actually fairly late. It's actually after the first settlement of property taxes. There may be a way to somewhat offset Representative Marquardt's thought here, or I'm sorry, the citizens' thought here, by accelerating that first half of that market value homestead credit payment. That would, however, have an impact on the state's general fund and the state's cash flow, so that's one way to skin that cat. I think those are the only comments I have.
Representative Earhart, did you have another question?
That's fine. I have other questions, but I think this gentleman apparently wants to speak on the same subject.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Joe Matthews with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I think Mr. Carlson already addressed a number of our concerns, and I apologize to Representative Marquardt for not having a chance to catch him earlier, but I think our primary objection is that it's not permissive, and there's a pretty accelerated timeline for transitioning to this. If the language was permissive, I think some counties may have the capacity to transition into a monthly payment system. Others simply may not. There are some costs involved in setting the system up, especially the smaller counties, and also it's a staffing issue. You get out of some counties where it's just the auditor. There isn't an auditor staff doing the work, and getting these payments eight times a year instead of twice is a significant increase in the workload. I would sympathize with the homeowners. Obviously, it's a big chunk. And I think that it warrants looking at maybe there's some ways that we can find a mechanism, and as Mr. Carlson suggested, if we could offset some of the cash flow issues for the local governments, that would help. But maybe there's also some other mechanisms we could look at to help folks find a way to spread it out and plan for it so it doesn't hit them twice a year.
Well, on that subject, there's still someone sitting over here. I didn't mean to bring all these people down on your head, but there is a question to me. Yeah. What?
You really created a hornet's nest there,
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members, I'm Keith Carlson from the Minnesota Intercounty Association. I agree with the comments of the previous testifiers on this issue. There's one more issue that the committee needs to be aware of. The state pays school districts their state aid under a system that's referred to as metering. It takes into account the monies that they receive from local property taxes and promises them that they will reach, basically on half-monthly intervals, a certain amount of their total revenues for the year. If you delay the payment of property taxes for homeowners, the state's obligation is going to go up, affecting the state's cash flow as well. In addition, that metering basically crosses the fiscal years of the state, and there would be a one-time additional cost to the state due to the reduced local tax collections that go against that metering metonymic or metronome. I'm not sure the exact term you use there. And so there's also cash flow issues to the state from this provision as well.
Thank you. And then we'll save, I think, any other audience sensitive fires until the end. Are there any other questions? Yes. That's Senator Hart.
Thank you. I just have a comment here, Madam Chair. House reinstatement, why did you leave the amount not to exceed $400,000? I happen to have lived in an area that was very high appreciation for a number of years, about 30-some years. And I paid $29,500 for my house. It's now valued at $672,000. And there are any number of spots around the world and that do the same thing. Of course, now you all know that I receive a salary of enormous proportions. So that I spend 3.5 to 4 months working to pay my property taxes. And I certainly would like to add on to my house and not have a tax for a while, but $400,000 isn't going to do it. Can we raise that?
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, that would certainly be negotiable. And I think when this old house first came about, it was to allow people to fix up their homes in older neighborhoods where houses were getting run down without the fear of their property taxes going up. And it was kind of a disincentive not to do it because you'd raise your property taxes. And I don't know, Ms. Baker, if there was a property tax limit under this old house or not, and she's waving her head, yeah. So it's certainly something that could be negotiable. There's no magic to that number other than why it was probably created. But I would like to say in response to the earlier question, you know, on the monthly payments, there may be extra paperwork and there may be an extra inconvenience, but my opinion is if there is an inconvenience in the system, it should be with the local units of government and not with the property taxpayer. You know, when, you know, it's an inconvenience for a senior citizen to have to, you know, save everything to pay twice a year. I mean, for a lot of people, that's an inconvenience. And I guess if we can send man to the moon, we can certainly come up with a way to make this work. And, you know, when I looked at the cash flow, I know when I was the mayor in Dilworth, things like police fines and community center rentals, those that came in gradually over time, that helped us keep from going into deficit spending and having to take out of our reserves. So I don't understand where the monthly payments would create a cash flow problem. Now, if there's some tweaks that can be need to be ironed out, I think so. But I don't think we would want to stop this because it might be some extra paperwork on the part of our local units of government.
Representative Wassler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to say to this old house, in our neighborhood in Minneapolis, when we were doing the neighborhood revitalization program and putting out low-interest loans to encourage people to fix up their homes, this was actually a really important tool to us to get homeowners who had somewhat run down or at least worn properties to step up and do it, because what the selling point was for them was that their taxes weren't going to go up until the home improvement loan was paid off. So you could actually put the debt schedule for the home improvement loan, sort of match it up with sort of the projected increase in their value. And so for people who are kind of living on the edge and a little bit afraid that, you know, gee, I'd really like to do this, whether it's taking down a single family car garage and replacing it with a double car garage or whatever, I mean, they really wanted to be able to know that they'd be able to manage it over the period of the loan, and this is one way to at least get them to think that it might be offset in terms of their personal budget. I know there's been stories that a lot of it was used for people to put luxury, you know, kitchens on and big additions, but I think for a lot of people in my community, it was really doing some pretty basic sort of work that would have been put off otherwise, and it really did help stabilize some areas.
Madam Chair, I know we're getting close here. I don't know if there's any further public testimony.
Is there any testimony from the audience?
Madam Chair, members, my name is Gary Carlson again. I'd like to speak in favor of Section 3, the This Old House provision. The League of Minnesota Cities has had a policy on our books to support the restoration of this old house. Per Representative Earhart's comments, we don't have any specificity about the thresholds, the valuations, and so forth, but I know a lot of our cities have found that to be a very successful program, encouraging reinvestment in their housing stock, and we think that's a good idea. In fact, we brought forward a bill to allow small businesses to do a similar sort of an exemption. I think that may be something you want to think about as well for some of the small business owners out there. But I would like to speak in support of Section 3 of the bill.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Joe Matthews with AMC again. I want to speak in support of two sections here. The first one is Section 5, which addresses the agricultural classification rates. And this is something that at AMC we've been talking about for years. And that has to do especially recently when farmland is appreciating at such a rapid rate and a lot of it's being driven by purchases of land that isn't being used for farming. So I would encourage you to go down that road. Like I said, all of our rural commissioners are well aware of this issue. It's a huge problem, especially in small rural counties that have primarily ag land and not a lot of big cities to offset the tax base. And then also on the property tax refund, the extension is great, but again, we've already talked in this committee about studying the truth in taxation. I think the comments that these citizens brought forward are right on point, that folks don't realize what's out there, how to use the refund, and it's underutilized. And we do think that as you move forward, you should include the study that we heard earlier that Representative Haas brought forward to have that issue really reviewed and really find a way to make that work. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, Representative Marquardt, my name is John Hagan. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And I'm speaking just to raise a flag that we have some concerns with Section 1, Subdivision 3, the area that deals with the sales ratio study. Our concern is that this provision, if enacted, might seriously affect our ability to conduct a sales ratio study, which would compromise our ability to conduct a meaningful and equitable State Board of Equalization. We are in the process of meeting with the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers, and we're hopeful to resolve any and all of these issues. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Geis. I'm from Scott County. I am currently the county auditor, and I also am on the legislative committee for MACO, the Minnesota Association of County Officers. I had contacted my cities and my school districts to ask them what type of a detrimental impact, if any, the 8-month installment payment would have on them, and I also asked them if they were having huge concerns to contact the associations that represent them. So I appreciate the League, AMC, and MICA coming forward and commenting on this bill, because it truly does have an impact on counties, on cities and on school districts. Not to say that we don't appreciate, acknowledge, and are trying to offer some of the alternatives to have monthly payment options ourselves. We understand that our taxpayers want to budget monthly. Everybody wants to have their monthly bills come at this, you know, so that you know exactly what you need to have to operate. Not that you have one big bill in one given month that's going to put you behind in some of the other types of things that you need to do to keep your operating expenses consistent. One of the things that the organization that I belong to has done is to have a payment portal. And counties have also implemented different payment portal opportunities on their own websites that allow taxpayers to come through and pay their tax bills monthly. They can pay any installment that they would like. It's up to them what they can afford at that given time. Scott County promotes installment payments. We feel that if taxpayers want to provide installment payments, they should have the opportunity to do so. When our truth in taxation notices go out, many of our taxpayers start making monthly installments at that time. Representative Marquardt read a letter from someone who actually took advantage of that particular option. They got their truth in taxation. They set up a payment opportunity for themselves with their local bank, whereas they're going to have an ACH or EFT opportunity where their bank will send us monthly payments. It was an absolutely positive and productive way to make those monthly installments without having a detrimental impact on the local governments. Talking about the bond to debt portion, one of my school districts really had very deep concerns. Our county has very deep concerns. We have debt payments due in June, July, and August. And our debt payments are up to about $2 million for those 3 months. If we implemented some type of an installment payment, we still would need to meet our May and October. That would be our goal. We took out the debt, understanding that those debt payments would be based upon an X amount of revenue being in the coffers of each of these local units of government. Short-term loans would have to be taken out by each of the local units of government.
Excuse me, just a minute. In the interest of time, I'm going to ask you to make your main points very quickly. We've got several bills here. I'm sorry.
Okay. I apologize. I guess in closing, all we wanted to say is please keep in mind that those debt schedules are set. We do not have any opportunity to work around that. As well, there are payment opportunities that are out there that we feel our taxpayers with proper notification can take advantage of. So maybe we'll just look to offer those type of educational and informative ways for them to take advantage of those opportunities now. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ken Rowe, and I manage the tax processing section of Hennepin County. I'm only going to take a couple of seconds here. Everything that I need to say has been said before. I do want to state, though, that we truly are not in opposition of the intent of this. We agree that the monthly payment option would be beneficial to everyone if we were all on the same page at the same time. So it's more of a timing issue than it is anything else. If we have to begin this right away, local governments' budgets are going to be set up for a different system. And that's the main thing. Our business processes are based on the same staff doing multiple different things. This will kind of compress that and make them... We have staffing issues. And so if we had more time to implement it, I think that it would be a good thing for everyone. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Let's send Mark White. Do you have any closing comments? Representative Lanchinsky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have an issue I want to raise on part of the bill, and I don't know. I know the Department of Revenue is here. I'm looking at him. He's shaking his head. No. Well, maybe at a later date. Representative Marquardt, I do want to try to get some information from the Department of Revenue as it relates to the property tax refund program. And Mr. O'Bain's comments, or Urban, I'm not sure, he said that, I think are very important. And many of us bipartisanly try valiantly, I think, to make sure that our residents know, but we are only trying to let the particular 40,000 we represent know. And I have this flyer I mail out every year to my entire district. I raise private funds to do it so that all my residents understand that they can apply for the property tax refund and the targeting, and that they can do senior deferral. That's not a statewide program. That's something I do as part of my personal campaign efforts and raising those funds so I can mail my district. And we don't do anything like that in the state, and it costs for a legislator to try to do that for their district. It's about $4,000 to send out a flyer explaining the program, and I think it just becomes incumbent on legislators to get the word out, and that's certainly not a good statewide strategy. But I do that yearly, and I've always wondered, and I know Ms. Baker knows that I think about this a lot. I would love to find out from the department who's actually getting those refunds. Now, this year we heard from the Commissioner of Finance in Ways and Means that we saw the report on the fastest growing parts of the budget. And actually, for the first time, I believe the PTR program is one of the fastest growing parts of the budget for the public in the tax committee. It's a spending item, so it's a thing that we see growing, and we want to see that grow. That means more and more Minnesotans are claiming it. We're not really sure why that's happening. Maybe it's because property taxes are too high and everyone's sort of saying, look, I need help. Maybe it's because legislators are doing a better job in informing their residents on how to get it. Maybe it's because in the conference committee, as Representative Lanning knows, we actually passed legislation to allow cities and counties and school districts to put information into their property tax statements, sort of explaining the program, and we're trying on a lot of fronts to get the word out there. But I do think it would be helpful for the department to tell us across the state of Minnesota who's really qualifying and who's getting them. And I wonder if the department can get us that information by zip code. I think in the past they have been able to do that, and it would be interesting to see on a map who all in the state of Minnesota, you know, is getting their property tax refunds and who isn't and why. Because I think it would really help if we've got 350,000 filers missing this, and we do need to get everybody who qualifies to get it. You know, what's really happening out there in Minnesota, and why do some parts of the state really come in and enforce and get their money and others don't? And I think this provision in your bill, Representative Marquardt, is really important, and I'm supportive of it. As your testifier said, we already let people go back a year. I think it would help to let them go back a few more years, although I'm not sure that would give you significantly more participation. I think it would give you the aha when you find out you could have gotten it, you could get it for more years. But to the question of actually getting the participation up, I think we do need revenue to provide us with some information, and I think if they can get us something in a timely fashion before you put your division report together, I think it would give the committee guidance as to how we might want to really figure out how to get folks like Mr. Urban to get that property tax refund that they've always deserved and haven't collected.
Thank you. Thank you. I just, again, want to thank all 650-plus residents that gave us input, and also to our testifiers today. And I think this hearing today shows that wonderful things can happen when you get residents involved. And with that, I'd like to renew my motion on House File 2142.
Thank you. I lay over House File 2142 for possible inclusion in the property tax report.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you.
We have Madam Chair, can I ask a question while we're waiting to shuffle around here? Yes. On this previous bill, Ms. Baker or Mr. Hines, what is the value of all the state property on deferral from this old house? And does not that shift, then the property tax shift to other forms of...
Are we asking this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, Ms. Baker's looking to see if we have any data, but you're right, it definitely is a shift. When you withhold that value off the tax rolls, it does shift to the other properties. You're correct about that. And I don't know if she's going to be successful.
The next bill we have for consideration is House File 1819.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, they're showing a very small dollar amount for the cost of the on the fiscal note, but that's only how much fits into the PTR program.
So it's millions of dollars, as I remember, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely would be in the millions, yes.
And so sorry, but just a reminder, we're just going to go for a couple of minutes.
That's fine with me, Madam Chair. Thank you. Members of the committee, the city of Prosser is a city of over 100 years old.
Minimum House Files 1819 for consideration. Representative Murphy.
Thank you. The city of Proctor is a city of over 100 years old, and it has problems with water, sewer, sidewalks, roads. And with me today is John Koshy, who is the city administrator, and Jake Benson, who is a former counselor and former mayor of Proctor, here to talk about the needs that Proctor has for their request.
I'm John Foshi, the Proctor City Administrator, and thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Proctor is a city that prides itself on its planning. It also is a city that's next to a wonderful natural resource called Lake Superior, and we'd like to keep that natural resource there. We have a lot of old sewer and water lines and storm sewer situations. We're on top of the hill, so everything, our water flows is pumped up to us, but everything else flows down. And we want to protect that. We have basically a comprehensive plan. Broken out from the comprehensive plan is a five-year capital improvement program in which we have a list of regional projects that would go for this, for the $7.2 million would go for. One of which basically is a urban connector road, which will provide a above-grade crossing over railroad tracks that cuts the town in half.
Yeah.
Cuts the city in half, basically at a bad point. We have a regional recreational center, the school football field, baseball, soccer field are there. Has one entrance exit. Should something happen, it would be a very unfortunate situation if that road was plugged up. This would provide a second entrance exit. And then we do have funding for the road and the bridge out of the Safety Lou Federal Highway Administration bill, thanks to Congressman Olvestar. But we need funding for the infrastructure, the storm sewer, water, and sanitary sewer. The rest of the projects are listed out on my list, the connections to the Willard Munger Trail, which is about 2 miles away. Infrastructure corrections to the sanitary sewer system, as Mary mentioned, over 100-year-old sewer lines that have infiltration inflow problems, and also to water, drinkable water lines with leaks, and we've done analysis on all of them. We've monitored, and we have specific targeted regional projects.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Jake Benson. I own three businesses in Proctor, and I'm a former two-term chamber member. This is a bill Proctor desperately needs. Proctor's always been a regional center. We were created to serve, the iron mining industry. Our railroad tracks runs to the range like a umbilical cord, yet we're not part of the Taconite tax relief effort. The railroad property in Proctor occupies 20% of all the developed land there. We're only 3 square miles, yet the railroad pays less than 50% of the property taxes other commercial businesses do. And the railroad's employment has dropped over from 4,500 down to less than 200 in the last couple of years. In addition, the railroad property, as well as U.S. Highway 2 and I-35, cuts up Proctor in a number of different ways, making a lot of the property inaccessible, and for years and years have caused tax forfeited property. We do continue to grow. We have 120,000 people visiting our community each year, staying in our hotels. Part of the reason why they come is Spirit Mountain. 80 acres are in within the corporate limits of Proctor, some of the most expensive, valuable property, yet they pay no taxes. This is a bill Proctor desperately needs. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Murphy, does Proctor, are they eligible for any WIF funds or things of that nature for the storm, the sanitary portion of things at all? Are you on the list or?
No, we're not on the list.
Okay, I haven't applied or anything like that?
Not in recent years.
No, I have in the past.
Okay. All right, and then the other question that I had,
Mr. Anderson,
is does Proctor receive LGA at all?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Are there any testifiers from the audience? Representative Murphy, do you have any closing comments?
I appreciate your consideration.
Over House File 1819 for possible consideration. I'm sorry, for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Committee report.
Thank you.
Okay. So next bill we have for consideration is House File 1820. And I will go ahead and move House File 1820 for possible inclusion. Representative, would you like to present your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, House File 1820 deals with a local sales tax probation for the city of Crookston, up to a half cent sales tax. And the rationale behind the bill is the city of Crookston is kind of like a four-leaf clover. The river goes all around it. And we have two arenas who sit right on the riverbank in the present dikes, which were built in 1950. These dikes now, because of the flood program we have, and we've been paying $150 per lot for the last 15 years. We're rebuilding our whole system. What happens now in this area where it's going to be rebuilt, we're losing our two basically hockey arenas and civic things. And the problem with that is the University of Minnesota Crookston uses that, the public schools use it, and it's used for a lot of the civic activities. So these are going to be torn down to provide for the new dike system, because the old dike system is really bad. So this would allow the city of Crookston to levy a half-cent sales tax to replace these two arenas and build it in a new location. And that's kind of a quick summary. It's up to the city could levy, or not levy a sales tax, up to $10 million, and they could also drop it at any time. They would sell bonds, and they would have a local referendum, which would be before the end of 2008, either this year or in the general election in 2008. I think that's a quick summary, Madam Chair, unless you have something more.
Thank you so much. Are there any questions? Is there any testimony from the audience?
Beg your pardon, ma'am?
Yes, for testimony from the audience. House File 1820 then will be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Committee report.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. We're going on to bill. Okay. The next bill up for consideration is House File 20. It's 1894. Can I move 1894 for a possible inclusion in the Property Tax Committee report? Representative Dill, would you like to present your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, first I want to orientate you. Cook County is located up at the tip of Minnesota. It's about as far away as you can possibly get from St. Paul. It's very sparsely populated. The entire county has a population of about 5,000 people. It's towns that you might be familiar with are Grand Marais, Lutzen, Tofte, Schroeder, the Grand Portage Indian Reservation. With that, Madam Chair, the bill allows establishment of a lodging tax for a specific list of purposes. If you could pass out the list of purposes, and we have a testifier here from the county, which can answer any of your questions on the bill.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Diane Booth. I'm the Community Center Director and what's left of Extension in Cook County, and I am representing Bob Fenwick, our County Commissioner, who had planned to be here and could not be here today. Most of you know where Cook County is. I think everybody knows Cook County as a tourism destination. We've had a number of industries there. We've had logging, we've had mining, we've had fishing. All of those industries have gone way down. Pretty much all of the jobs, all of the economic development that we have in Cook County, about 80% is tied to tourism. And so tourism infrastructure is pretty important to us. What we're asking is that the 1% sales tax that was used for the hospital, once those bonds are paid, that we're allowed to use that to work on our tourism infrastructure. And we have four specific projects that have been outlined. The Superior National Golf Course, which is located along Lake Superior, draws people from international areas as well as nationally. And there's nearly $1 million in bonds that have to be paid off. That would be one project. Within Grand Marais, we have one pool, one county pool for all of Grand Marais, or for all of Cook County. Remember, there's 931,000 square miles, and we have 5,000 people within that area. And our pool is 40 years old. It's falling apart. The cost of building a new pool would be about $6 million, which is about the same price of what they're talking about to renovate the one that's currently there. And a new pool would allow us to actually have a nice pool and really fit the needs of both visitors and local residents. The third project we're looking at is the Grand Marais Public Library. Now, once again, remember, in rural Minnesota, we have one library system. We have one library only in Grand Marais for everybody to use. We all travel 30, 40, 50 miles from all parts to use that library. And what's happening is our library is not large enough to actually meet all the needs of the visitors that come, not only residents, but visitors as well.
How about I have you stand for questions? Are there any questions? Representative Anderson. Well, maybe this is for you, Madam Chair. Is this the last bill that we're going to be hearing today? We're figuring that out right now. Okay, Madam Chair, I have several questions then. Couple here, looking at the swimming pool. Having visited Grand Marais, I'm assuming that this is an indoor swimming pool, I hope.
It is an indoor swimming pool, yes.
Okay, all right, good, because the summer months don't last very long, and they're still chilly up there. And then also, this is perhaps for our staff. Can you give us some history a little bit on how often have we approved sales taxes for things such as a skate park, skateboard park, hockey rink, tennis courts, parking lot, things of that nature? And a golf course.
Madam Chair, Representative, parks and recreation have been things that have been kind of iffy in the past. Swimming pools in particular have generally not been allowed. Back in 2005, the conference committee actually took a swimming pool out of a local sales tax bill that it authorized. It's always taken swimming pools out of any authorization. This is the first one I've ever seen for a skate park.
Okay. Ms. Sultan, I am going to call and turn this back over to Chair Marquardt.
Well, Representative, we need to lay this over because we need to get to session. So we got, is this House File 1894?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Chair will lay over House File 1894 for possible inclusion. Representative Brown, did you have a witness on 2231?
I don't.
Okay. No, neither did I. Representative Loeffler, you think your witness can come back?
Mm-hmm.
All right. We're going to have to deal with these bills another time. We need to get to session.
Chair?
Yes, Representative Dale.
So this bill is laid over. We don't have to reappear?
That's correct.
I just have one comment then.
Yep.
I'd like for the members to remember that in Cook County, only 9% of the entire county's landmass is taxable. 91% of Cook County is owned by the government. Of that 9% of the land that is taxable in Cook County, 61% is seasonal recreational. So they have extremely limited ability to raise the money. And in terms of the recreational facilities, which is the number four item, as you can see, that is number four.
Okay.
And that the other items are much more of a priority.
Mr.
Representative Anderson, very quick.
Yes. Talking about the recreational items that are listed here, what
Who's the furthest resident from Grand Marais? How far would they be traveling to utilize the recreational items?
Chairman?
Representative Dill.
Well, the Gunflint is 56 miles to the tip of the Gunflint, uh-huh. And the county line to the west is probably about where you, how far is it to your house? 30?
Looking at about 40 miles.
And okay. To the east, even further, up to the Canadian border. I mean, and, you know, the population is relatively spread, except in the center of Grand Marais, there where the highest nucleus is, but the population is spread out through that entire area. 900,000 square miles of area in that county.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
So, Representative Adil, we're talking about more than 56 miles then to access.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Representative Dill, and testifiers, and I apologize, but we're out of time, and we are adjourned.